Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Frontier Beyond Fear radio program. I'm Susan Larison-Dance, and I am broadcasting from what is becoming the more rainy and misty Pacific Northwest in the hills southwest of Portland, Oregon. And at this time of year, we really welcome change, I think, change of the seasons. There is a certain beauty to the misty forest that I greatly appreciate. In this area of the country, a sense of rejuvenation. And so I always accept the rains here as just a natural part of what makes this place so beautiful. So welcome those of you who are listening in various parts of the country and even the world. I welcome you to this show today. Today I am welcoming back on the show someone I've been really looking forward to talking with again. A truly enlightened, wonderful soul. Her name is Susie Miller. Many of you have heard of her. She is the author of Awesomism, A New Way to Understand the Diagnosis of Autism. And what I love about Susie's background is, like many of us who have worked in a more scientific field, I have as well, and have then gone into a spiritual field. She combines this wonderful balance of her work for 25 years as a pediatric speech language pathologist with her spiritual understanding of what's actually going on in the world. And her focus are these wonderful children that are coming into the world right now that are often diagnosed as autistic or Asperger's as parents. As many of you know, I'm a mom as well. And so as parents, we all come in contact with kids with the diagnosis of ADHD to autism to different things that seems to be more common these days. And yet these are absolutely remarkable children that many people have called even children of the new earth. That's a term that has been used to describe these children who have very special abilities that they are in touch with. And so Susie's going to talk to us about that. While you're listening to the show, I just wanted to mention up front that Susie's website is susiemiller.com, and there is a link on the show page, but be careful if you click it. Make sure you bring it up in a different window or it will take you off the page. So I just wanted to warn you of that. Right-click on it and bring it up in another window if you want to glance at it during the show or look at it later. We also have a chat room open today if you have comments and questions for Susie. And also, we will be welcoming callers should you have a question, and that number is 310-807-5104. And something that I know is very exciting that we're going to be talking about is Susie's collaboration with Dr. William Tiller on a new experiment involving these children. And those of you who have seen What the Bleep Do We Know would immediately recognize him. In fact, I put his picture up on the show page along with Susie's, and that's all you need to see if you've seen What the Bleep Do We Know. And I know that we also have listeners who are coming from a diversity of spiritual backgrounds, and as you know, I welcome that so much on this show because this is a show where we all come together and talk about things honestly and often in new ways. And those of you who may not have heard of some of these concepts, I just hope that you come with an open mind, as I know you always do, and allow yourself to just listen to some different ways of thinking about what may be going on with these wonderful children in all of our lives. So without further delay, I'm going to bring Susie on the show. Welcome, Susie. It's so nice to have you back.
Thank you for having me, Susan. It's great to be here.
Well, you are engaged in really interesting work right now, and I feel like, it really changes the world one person at a time. You know, there's nothing more. It must be wonderful waking up every day and knowing that you're really helping the parents of these children, and you're helping these children express fully their true selves.
It is a nice experience, and it's a nice experience when that awareness expands out, you know, beyond myself and, you know, into the certified practitioners that I have and into their clients and, you know, into their clients' friends. You really get to see the ripple effect of, you know, of what you do in the world, and that does feel really good.
And you mentioned something that's really important about your work right now is that it has really grown, hasn't it? Because now you have this whole network of practitioners. But before we get into that, I wonder, since I know that for some people listening, they may not have heard the other show, which I will reference later so that people can go back and listen to that as well if they like. But why don't you go ahead and reintroduce everyone to your work and how you are able to view autistic children, as well as how you came to this understanding. I think people would appreciate hearing a brief version of your story, because I know it's so interesting how this all came about.
Yeah, my story really begins in 1999, and as you said, I was was and still am a pediatric speech-language pathologist, or at least have the credentials to be. And at that time, I was working with children diagnosed with autism. One child in particular kind of really created an awakening for me. And that awakening was not just about autism, but it was really about, you know, it really changed my perceptual reality around everything. I began to see everything as energy, or as aspects of energy, versus just what we see in the physical body or how we reference the physical world through our mind. And from that experience, I had the opportunity to work with numerous children, hundreds and hundreds of families, over the years where the children would pretty much offer me the same information. And in a nutshell, the information was basically that this particular population is very new to the human condition, and because they are new to the human condition, it makes it very challenging for their souls, to be in a physical body. And there's all kinds of reasons behind that, which we can go into further if you like. Mm-hmm. But generally, my vantage point very much changed from, you know, how do we fully come into the body? How does our soul become one with, you know, this kind of physical experience? And how does the physical experience really represent the soul? And so from that vantage point, I started to teach other people about my experiences and what I knew to be true about this population. And about 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago now, I started the Autism certification process. Mm-hmm. And the Autism certification process was basically the opportunity to offer other individuals who were having a unique vantage point of this population some common language, some common discussions. Many of these people that come to this process are, you know, they know these things. They've had similar experiences to what I have had, but we haven't had a common language. And we also haven't had the ability necessarily as a collective to hear information directly from the children.
Yeah.
And when I say that, I mean through telepathic kinds of communications. So the whole process is really based on the ability to connect directly with these children, soul to soul, and whether that's verbally or whether that's telepathically, the opportunity to connect soul to soul and really know what they're needing, what they're asking for, and to proceed from that place.
How do the children respond when maybe they've felt somewhat shut off in that they haven't been able to communicate, and suddenly is it like a light comes on and it's like, wow, someone is listening in a
way.
Yeah, that must be really something. I wonder if you could give an example, perhaps, that people might appreciate of this happening.
Yeah, it's happened so many times now, Susan. It's amazing to listen to a child give you a piece of information that their parent really needs to know. And the minute that you give that piece of information to the parent, something changes in the parent's perceptual reality, and it changes in a way that is very personal to them because their own children have provided that information. I mean, nobody knows a parent better than their own children, and so to be able to hear that information back really does help. So examples would be, you know, very frequently if I'm talking directly with a parent, I will be either on the phone with them or in person with them, and the child will literally come up during the time that we're having a conversation. I've had children say, "Listen, Mommy." I've had children come up and, you know, hold their parents or hold me and clap. You know, these are children who are nonverbal and who are, you know, in most cases would appear to be not paying attention to what was taking place. And yet, over and over again, these children are letting us know that, yep, you hit the right place at the right time. This is the information that they need. We also hear, especially people who are entering the certification process, especially parents, their children also will kind of let them know, you know, this is the right thing to do. We've had parents whose children have flat out told them to do this piece of work. We have had children who have kind of indicated in one way or another through their kind of spontaneous language that, yep, this is the right moment at the right time, pay attention. And it's happened, like I say, it's happened so many times at this point that you almost grow to expect it because you understand that the child is offering information directly to the parent through either myself or the certified practitioners, and it's anchoring. It's changing the parents' lives.
Yes. So do you teach the parents then to listen as well? Is there a certain amount of teaching that goes on that assists the parent when a practitioner is not there? Or how do you work with the parents as well as the kids? I'm curious about that.
Right. At this stage of the game, I'm working primarily with my practitioners to go out and offer this information. Within that framework, there are some of those practitioners are parents, some of those practitioners are professionals, but the general gist of it, both whether I was doing it personally, you know, in a private session with a parent, or whether I was doing it with the certified practitioners. When you offer a piece of information to a parent, initially a parent will typically want information that they don't feel that they can get themselves. So, you know, many parents out there would not necessarily consider having a telepathic communication with their child to figure out what they needed or wanted.
Yeah.
And not because they can't, but just because they haven't had the opportunity to know that that's a possibility. So a lot of the clients that come to me initially, they will want some information about their children. And when that information is given and then that information is proven successful, they begin to have an awareness that, wow, this kind of connection is available, that it's not something that's woo-woo and out there, that it's kind of part of who we all are. We all have this ability. About that time, then we can begin to offer, whether it's myself or one of the certified practitioners, can begin to offer these parents some of the skill sets that are needed to kind of make this connection on their own. And that's really the ultimate. You know, you want to leave somebody with information so that they can connect with their own children and get their information in their own way.
Yeah.
That's when it becomes very, you know, very purposeful and very practical.
I would think that that in itself, I mean, it's not just the kids that are having trouble communicating, but I can only imagine being a mom myself that to be able to establish that connection when you couldn't before, you know, that must be a truly amazing experience, sort of, you know, as they say, an aha moment kind of thing.
Yeah.
For a loving parent to suddenly be able to actually reach a child that maybe they've had a lot of trouble reaching, that they love so very much.
Absolutely. And, you know, a lot of times the children, when they give their messages to their parents, a lot of the information embedded in that message is just what you were just talking about. You know, thank you for trying to reach me the way that you have been trying to reach me up to this point. And thank you for pursuing other forms of communication so that we could get to this place. I believe that what the children are trying to do constantly is they're attempting to expand the awareness of the parent. And part of the reason why, you know, we all know that when we have a child that has anything that is a challenge for them, you know, a parent will really go into new arenas. They will try new things in support of that child. And they may or may not do that same thing, you know, for themselves. So a lot of times these children come and because they're nonverbal or because they appear to be unreachable at a kind of physical level, all of a sudden you have parents who, you know, maybe like me, maybe like you, very scientific in nature, but all of a sudden they're willing to expand beyond their comfort zone into something that is new. And I think that's very purposeful. I think that that is part of one of the gifts that this population gives to us. They encourage us to go beyond what is typical, beyond what has been the norm. And in doing so, they awaken part of us that we may not have even known existed. So that part is really exciting to watch as well.
Yes, and I know that, you know, some people listening may be skeptical about telepathy, and yet I would remind people that, you know, almost all of us have experienced in the most simple of ways, you know, where you think of a friend who hasn't called you in a while, and they call. And I think sometimes when we're first waking up to these ideas, we tend to be a little bit in denial of them, and yet we see the evidence of them. And so I would encourage people to really think outside the box, because one of the things we do know, in fact, I would be curious what you would have to say about autistic savants, for example, who are known to access parts of their brain that are just amazing. I mean, the things that they can do are, even on a conventional scale, you know, if you're not even talking about telepathy, absolutely remarkable. And so is it so hard to conceive that these kids would have access to even more abilities that we may view as equally remarkable, and yet sometimes we're afraid of. You know, we're afraid sometimes as a society to say telepathy is real, even when we see it right in front of us quite often. And so how have you, when you are easing people into this idea that this is real and you know, think outside the box. How does that process work, Susie? Do you see people coming to you that, you know, maybe at first aren't quite so sure, and then all of a sudden they just see it and they're just like, wow?
Absolutely. I love the parents that call that say, you know, my friend told me that I should call you, and I think this is all a bunch of bull, and I don't, I'm not really sure that this is going to do anything, but I'm kind of at my wit's end, so I'll try something different. So there's that part. But the other thing is that for people who are really skeptical, I go back to my speech language training, my speech pathology training, because, you know, as a pediatric speech language pathologist, you are taught that there are more levels of communication than just verbal communication. So sometimes a great place to start is the fact that a lot of these parents, especially parents of children who are nonverbal, they're already doing a form of telepathy before you even really have that conversation. These are the parents who have really begun to watch their children's body language, have been able to tell, you know, just like you can tell when a baby cries. Sometimes a baby's cry is, I'm hungry. Sometimes a baby's cry is, I'm wet. Sometimes a baby's cry is, I hurt. And we begin to intuitively know the difference between those. Parents of children diagnosed with autism, and especially those who are nonverbal, they are brilliant already. They've been saturated in an opportunity to read the nuances of language. And that language has nothing to do with verbal communication. And so from that vantage point, it's not too much of a jump to say, okay, you can notice the subtleties and the differences in that type of communication. You even know the difference in, you know, if your child makes a sound this way versus that way, you know what it means. So if we took away all of the external sound, if we took away all of the external kinds of cues, there might still be cues available that are more energy-based. So you're just kind of layering people out of the physical experience and into more subtle levels of communication. And like I say, it's not that far of a jump from I can tell the difference between this sound and that sound to I can tell the difference between this body posture and that body posture. And then I can tell the difference because I just get a sense internally that my child needs this or that. So that sensory perception, that ability to intuit, is there in these individuals as well. And all you have to do is kind of point them in that direction, then all of a sudden they're going, oh, I hear the words that go with that, or I get an image or a picture that goes with that. And now they're already into telepathy, and they didn't even know they got there. You know, it's just because it is absolutely just part of who we are. And as a speech pathologist, if I pair the speech-language pathology part of me with my kind of newfound energetic awareness or understanding of vibration, if you were to lighten up the vibration of verbal communication, you know, it's going to lighten up and become less structured, less physical, less dense. Where does that end up when you really lighten it up? It ends up in a form of telepathy. And so it really isn't, I mean, science shows us this all the time already, this opportunity that different expressions have different frequencies. And so it makes sense that we could move into that, you know, kind of naturally and organically. It's just part of who we are.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that the more that I've studied some of these concepts just in general from, you know, I had a scientific education. I was a computer scientist, but it still involved physics and different things that I had to take in college. And the thing is that we are energy, and, you know, I think sometimes it's not some fuzzy woo-woo idea to think that there are these energetic things that occur. There is energetic phenomena. And I really think that, you know, the scientists are waking up to this idea too. In fact, this may be the perfect lead-in. You know, one of if you want a nice introduction to the concept of all of us being energy, a film that's out there that's quite popular is What the Bleep Do We Know? And I know that you recently announced, Susie, a collaboration with, you know, I have to tell you, one of my favorite people in that film.
Yeah, mine too.
I saw that, I thought, oh, wow. And, you know, I'll tell you, people, this is why I put his picture on the show page, because we don't always remember names. You know, I'm bad with names sometimes. I don't remember all the different people who are in that movie. But the minute I saw his face, it was like, oh, my gosh, she's collaborating with him?
That's what I
really
say every
day. He's just, I mean, talking, I mean, he's from Stanford. Tell us a little bit about Dr. William Tiller. I'll let you tell us, and then what you're doing with him, as well as I would invite you. I know this experiment involves intention, and since we do have a diverse audience here, I'd like you to kind of intro that concept as well for those who may not. So kind of a loaded question here, and I'll just let you go with it.
Okay, well, get me back on track if I go off track, but I'll address it as
you
ask me to.
You can't go off track on this show.
So, Dr. William Tiller is Professor Emeritus from Stanford University. He was at Stanford for quite a while, and he, for the last four decades, he has been doing experiments with intention. So, basically, you know, the current or maybe the old paradigm scientific model is that consciousness, our consciousness, our intention, our desire for something to change has no impact. You know, regular science will say that consciousness has no impact in how something changes or whether it can or cannot change. For the last 40 years, Dr. Tiller has been doing research around intention, and he has indeed proven over and over again that a consciousness can change the dynamics of all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
So he will also say that intention has to be an intention that is coherent, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But basically, what the premise is that, you know, when you have individuals who come together, and we've seen this, you know, in experiments where everybody prays or sets an intention for, you know, for crime to be reduced. You know, I know there was a study about that in the state of Washington, D.C., and it did indeed, you know, these individuals coming together did indeed impact, you know, the rate of crime in Washington, D.C. We've also seen some of Dr. Emoto's work on water and how, you know, setting an intention, setting a focus, you know, for water changes the water as well. So Dr. Tiller has done these intention experiments for the last 40 years. What he has noticed is that our intention, our coherent intention, that means an intention that is very focused, very clear, very direct, can absolutely change not only a substance, but a space. So he's done some experiments around changing the pH of water. So they set an intention. They want the pH of that water to go up a certain percentage. And lo and behold, by setting an intention and holding that intention coherently, that's exactly what happens. And then they decide they want the pH of water to go down, and they're able to do that as well. So from that standpoint, you know, we're understanding that, you know, yes, our consciousness can change things that are very physical. So there was also an experiment that he did, which is represented on his website, which is tiller.org.
Uh-huh.
And he has some white papers there, scientific papers, that he has written. There's one, the white paper number 16 is about depression and anxiety. So he also did an experiment where he set an intention to change anxiety and depression in people by supporting that energy of health and well-being within their environment. That also was unbelievably successful. And so when I met Dr. Tiller, what we had decided is that we could also set an intention that these children would be able to integrate into their physical experience. So many of us have seen children diagnosed with autism. Many of us would describe them as individuals who are kind of not all here. I mean, they're not
yes.
all here in the sense that they're not present in their physical environment.
Yes.
My languaging for that is that they are not integrated into their physical body. Their soul and their physical body are in different states of vibration. And because of that, they appear to not be here. You know, they're somewhere else.
Yes, yes, it's true.
In this experiment, we have set an intention that these children would be able to integrate into their physical bodies. That integration will take place because the intention is to change their space, change the energy of their space, so that that energy is more conducive of them being of a soul, their soul,
uh-huh.
being in the physical body. The other piece of this experiment, which I think gets negated over and over again, and I was so excited when Dr. Tiller was open to having a twofold intention.
Uh-huh.
One intention is for the child to be here, but if the child shows up in the physical body and begins to do things that they haven't been able to do before because of that, if there's no one there to see it, to acknowledge it, to nurture it,
yes.
then the likelihood that they will go back to where they came from is pretty good.
Uh-huh.
So the intention is twofold. The first intention is for the child to be present in their physical body. The second intention is for the parent to be able to allow that process to be supportive of that process.
Yeah.
So it's almost as if we're supporting, well, we are. We're supporting the families, we're supporting the parent and the child to kind of reach some common ground where they can see each other very clearly, kind of soul to soul, for the gifts that each one possesses.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing that, I think we are also going to have the opportunity to, quote-unquote, prove to the medical community that, you know, that these children are different energetically, and that not only that, but our intention and the way we see things, the way we perceive both our children and other experiences, really does make a difference. You know, we are
oh, yeah.
impacting that. So really very exciting. And I know there's another part you asked me, Susan, and I've completely forgotten what it was.
And you know what? I think I forgot it too.
Okay.
But I think you answered most of what I asked, although I have more questions. And, you know, as you say, you know, you really got me when you say that our expectations, you know, in a way, it's so sad that a lot of times people are taught to expect very little. You know, they're told, well, this is the most that he or she will ever be able to do, very dire, very depressing, and that energy, in fact, my voice is carrying it already, is mm-hmm. conveyed to the parent by the doctor, and, you know, there's really no hope, you're not going to see much improvement over this, or, I mean, I know there must be people listening. And by the way, I should say I'm noticing people joining the chat, most of whom are guests, which means they're not typical listeners to the show, so they can't actually type questions, although I did put out there that if anyone has a question, they're welcome to call 310 877-507-5104. And just for those who are joining this stream midstream, my guest today is Susie Miller, who is the author of Awesomeism, A New Way to Understand the Diagnosis of Autism. So, and she's giving us an amazing view of these kids and this experiment that is about to take place, or I guess is underway. But anyway, back to my thought is that it's really so sad that so many people are being taught to project hopelessness in a way. And, you know, what kind of impact does that have on these kids when the parents are told, you know, you just aren't going to be able to do any more. This is what you have, or, you know, and what does that convey?
Absolutely. Well, and, you know, I think from my vantage point, too, to find a scientist who has the credentials that Dr. Tiller has.
Oh, yes.
To also have that, I mean, to have the same vantage point in many ways that I have of this population really was just an absolute delight to me, as you can imagine. The opportunity to, you know, he also really sees this population as what he calls a new epoch. You know, we are changing as a humanity. We're changing all the time. And like you say, if we look through those physical eyes, we will see that change as something that is, quote-unquote, bad. We'll see that change as something that is based in limitation. But if we can see beyond the physical and beyond our mental ideas of, quite frankly, who anybody is, not just who these children are, but in the case of these children, when we really can begin to see, okay, you do have challenges in the physical realm, and maybe you even have challenges in the mental processing kind of realm, but we also know that anybody, we all have challenges, we all have strengths, and we all have weaknesses. So where are the strengths of this population? And
yes.
Interestingly, when a parent begins to ask, or even a professional, when a doctor begins to ask, where are the strengths in this population? They will be taken into kind of more, some more subtle kinds of realities. And that part is really brilliant because, you know, here we have a population of children who are very gifted, but they're not gifted in the way that humanity has said giftedness should occur. You know,
yes.
they're not out making tons of money, and they're not out, you know, being a success as far as popularity and things like that. They have other gifts and other levels of awareness that are much more subtle than those kinds of gifts. And when we pay attention to those, even putting our attention there is brilliant because, again, we begin to see that what we put our attention on, we get more of. So you're right. For the physician to say, your child will never do this, that, or the other thing, your child is limited, it causes the parent to put their attention there, and they
yes.
get more of it because they put their attention there. Whereas, you know, I love getting parents who have not yet had a diagnosis, you know, suspect
uh-huh.
maybe autism, but not quite there yet, or who have just been diagnosed. I love for those individuals to find, you know, somebody like me or somebody who's talking in a similar way, one of the certified practitioners, because the minute they begin to hear of a different potential and possibility, they start putting their attention there. And the minute they put their attention there, their children are able to show them something that they may never have gotten to see if they stayed with that old medical model. And I think that this experiment with Dr. Tiller, well, I would go so far as to say I know that this experiment with Dr. Tiller is going to be able to really bring to the surface just how important our awareness, our focused intention is. When we had this, we had a preliminary call with Dr. Tiller on September 25th, and there were about 30 people that were signed up for that particular call. Mm-hmm. And what was really interesting to me is just by having the conversation, just by Dr. Tiller and I having the conversation with these individuals, you know, I was here getting emails back, oh my gosh, I've noticed this and I've noticed that. The intention experiment hadn't even started yet. And so that piece really does tell me that depending on where an individual is in their own awareness, this opportunity is really a pretty significant one. And, Susan, what I do want to say, too, is that the experiment has not started yet, so there's definitely still room for people to participate in this. I think we have about 40 families that have pre-registered for this process already. We can take up to 100 families, and they can be from anywhere in the world. So they're not, you know, that space, that time is not going to impact this experiment whatsoever, because the intention is going to be sent to them, and that intention will be very clear and coherent no matter where they live in the world. So
if someone is listening who has a real interest and perhaps wants to talk to you one-on-one some more about, you know, what it's all about, and then possibly, and there may be people listening who are just like, sign me up. And I will tell you, we have a lot of guests in the chat room right now. I'm watching this interesting phenomenon. I want to tell the guests in the chat room, I know, see, the thing with the chat is if you're a guest, which means you're just coming in to the show, maybe from Twitter or from some other environment, if you sign up for a login, you can actually ask questions in the chat. And it's really easy to do, and there's no obligation. It's just a Blog Talk Radio login. But the interesting thing is your show, Susie, seems to be drawing in people who, you know, they're just, I don't know exactly where they're coming from, but they're kind of muted out there because they can't type in the chat. And so I just wanted to let them know if they want to type in the chat, they could quickly get a login and they'll be able to. Or again, if they have a question that we can address on the show, we only got about, it's going by fast, as I knew it would. We've got close to 15 minutes left, but the call-in number is 310-807-5104. Anyway, there are probably people listening, Susie, who are saying, sign me up. Or others who may just want to talk to you about this, you know, what is this really all about? And, you know, as you're talking, I was thinking, again, if you're coming to this, I always think about, you know, how is the, if you're coming from it from a, you know, not really being exposed to this kind of thing point of view, I think about Helen Keller. That came to mind. I know she wasn't autistic, but somebody believed in her and reached out to her. And how much, you know, they say that Anne Sullivan was an amazing teacher, and I'm sure she was, but what was so important is that nobody believed in her, in her environment. Nobody believed that she could go beyond where she was, which was in a very limited place, and yet what happened when someone actually did believe? And this experiment that you are engaged in, I think it will document what some would call the miraculous. And that's what I love about it, because it's not the miraculous. It's the aspect of science. It's the aspect of our world that we just don't understand yet. And that's what Dr. Tiller and you are getting at. And it's so important because it's expanding the paradigms of science. You know, what is science? Understanding reality. And he chooses not to be in a box in understanding reality. He actually wants to understand it. and so that's what I appreciate.
Yeah, he's not willing to be limited by, you know, by the idea that we have no control, no awareness, no ability to alter our realities. And, you know, because from that vantage point, you know, we all would be very much the victim. You know, we would be very victimized in that scenario. And yet every single time he proves that that our consciousness can in and of itself change a reality. Just, you know, the ramifications of that, I think, are really profound. And, you know, we've all watched science and, you know, we know from history books that, you know, the world was flat and then, you know, the Earth was the center of the universe. And, you know, we've all heard all of those things that at one time were hard-clad truth.
Yes.
And now are not, because somebody came along and was able to demonstrate otherwise. I truly believe that we have a population of children now that are functioning in a particular way, and their energy, their energetic makeup or soul makeup is such that they are really very new to this human condition. And with that newness, they bring all kinds of information, all kinds of awareness that we simply have not had yet. But if we believe they're disordered and we shut them down and we say there's, you know, there's nothing there, or maybe there's a limitation there, and we spend so much time on the limitation, we never get to see what they're actually offering to us. And an offering it is exactly what they're doing. It's, I see them literally trying to hand it to us. And yet, you know, we can't see it until we can see it. So things like, you know, this Tiller experiment, this intention experiment, really gives the opportunity to maybe first shift an awareness for people who are already pretty close to having that understanding in the first place. But once that is in the scientific community, it really does open this up to so many people who may never, like you say, maybe brand new to this kind of information.
Yeah.
They never would have considered it from, you know, a speech-language pathologist turned, you know, multidimensional communicator. But when it's in science, that's a whole different ballgame.
True.
It is absolutely true. And I love that about this opportunity, because it will open this awareness to a whole level of, you know, a broader scope of humanity, which is wonderful.
Well, it really is building bridges. And what you say about science is so true. I mean, science is all about paradigm shifts. I mean, people were always viewed as crazy when they are, you know, just totally off base when they proposed some new idea. And then what happened? The whole thing shifted and they have to throw away all the old ideas. And that's what happens in science. And the kind of work that you're engaged in, it's courageous. It really is. You know, Dr. Tiller is very brave to he's a true scientist is what he is, because he's not going to allow someone saying, oh, that's ridiculous or whatever, you know, I'm sure he's heard it, to stop him from actually discovering truth, which is what,
absolutely,
you know, science is the pursuit of understanding our reality, and that's what you are really engaged in. And I think about, you know, there's a quantum physics experiment, which I know must cause quantum physicists who don't have an open mind to lose sleep, because if their expectation actually impacts where particles are going to be in their experiments.
Exactly.
And this has been documented, and I'm sure Dr. Tiller, in fact, he may have spoken about this even in What the Bleep. I can't remember who did, but, you know, it's been discussed and documented that this occurs. Well, how can that be? That's, you know, that's not possible. Well,
how
it's only
possible?
Not... And you know, again, with these autistic kids, and I know not all of them are savants. I know that's a special area, but that has often been viewed as amazing. How do they do that? You know, anyone who's seen Rain Man, which is a dramatic presentation of the idea, that really occurs, where they can recall, you know, do these amazing calculations. They obviously have access to a part of their brains, to something that the rest of us don't have access to. And even though, in fact, I'm curious, although I got to be careful here because we are getting close to the end of our live show. This show, by the way, has a lot of listeners in the archive, and we welcome those people. In fact, in a multidimensional sense, I would say that they are present here with us energetically, as I'm sure you can recognize as well. And so I know that people will be listening to this show in the future. In fact, since your experiment is very much based in the current time, I want to make sure people understand what are the parameters for signing up. What do you expect? I guess when you hit 100 people, is that when or at what point do you expect it will launch and then this particular phase will be closed to new people? So you probably should, if there is that point, we should probably express that as well.
Right. We are looking for children who have a either formal or informal diagnosis of autism, either from an educational setting and or from a medical setting. So we want somebody to have said, you know, this child, you know, appears to be diagnosed with autism. So we would also, we are also looking for parents who are interested, obviously, in participating in this experiment with their children because, like I said, there is an intention for the child and for the parent. We can have 100 families. They can be anywhere in the world. When we get to 100 families, there's a couple scenarios here, Susan. One scenario is that we get to 100 families, and at that point, it costs $250 for the full year. This is a year-long experiment. So it would take $250 for the family to participate in this experiment for that full year, which is absolutely nothing for, you know, for what this actually is. Dr. Tiller and I have both, Dr. Tiller and I have both agreed that we would not be financially compensated for this. So that that money goes specifically to support the individuals who are collecting this data, to the individuals who are actually sending out this intention. So basically, that we're looking for 100 families and or donations to support the $25,000 that it takes to run this experiment for 1 year. Everybody can sign, people can sign up on my website. I would ask that they would pre-register, because as we get closer to that number, we'll know exactly when this intention experiment is going to begin. But we're really looking at, you know, the end of October, the beginning of November, and for those listening in the future, that would be of 2012.
Okay.
So so 100 families, $250 for the year to participate. Pre-registration is required so that we can make sure that your name is part of that process. And basically what will be taking place is that an intention will be held in what Dr. Tiller calls an intention device. That intention will be projected to the parent's home, and that intention will change the space. It will literally change the vibrational makeup of the space, making it easier for the parent to see the gifts of the child and make it easier for the child to show up in their physical bodies. So that is basically it in a nutshell, but we do need people to pre-register in order to hold their space.
And I want to remind people that your website is SusieMiller.com. And it is on the show page, so people can easily access it when they're listening to this show. And something I don't always do, but with this show, I really feel called to do it, is if you are someone who's hearing this and happens to know a family that you think could be assisted by this experiment, please encourage them to look into this if you feel called to do so, because I sense that, you know, there may be people listening who may not have a child themselves, but in their head they're thinking, you know, boy, this would really help so-and-so. You know, they're thinking about that. And please follow through on that thought and just give that family an opportunity to look into this, because this is truly something unique. And as you say, Susie, I mean, we're talking about a scientist from Stanford. This is mainstream as you get. I mean, it's not something to be frightened of. It's really something that I can only say a unique opportunity, and really could be of assistance to these families, is what's so remarkable. It's not just an experiment. It's actually going to shift the environment for these kids. And, you know, I feel like what you're doing is really amazing. And so it truly is an honor to have you on the show talking about it, Susie. And
thank
I know
you.
That we're coming to the end of our hour, which went by so very quickly. And I do want to thank you so much for being here today, and also give you an opportunity, if there are any final thoughts that you want to leave with the people listening in general, maybe some thoughts of encouragement to someone who's just waking up to these ideas, if there are any final things that you'd just like to say to those listening who could be assisted by your work.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there's one thing I do want to mention about the Tiller experiment as well.
Yes.
If there is an organization that people are part of or know of an organization that supports children diagnosed with autism, if you would like to email me, I do have kind of almost a form letter kind of thing that can go out to them. I'm happy to share that with anybody who would like to send that either to an individual or to, you know, an organization. And you can definitely reach me through the website. Just go to the contact button on the website, and I'll get that information to you. As far as leaving you with something regarding this population, I think what I'd like to leave you with is my excitement. You know, just my excitement for the fact that, yes, we do have a population of children who are very different than what we have experienced before. And yes, there is an amazing gift within that difference. And it's my understanding, my belief, having connected with these children on a variety of levels in a variety of ways, that this difference really does have the opportunity to impact not just the way we see these children, but the way we understand ourselves. And to me, that is a very exciting place to be. So I would highly suggest that we just be curious. I love the word curiosity.
Yes.
And if you will be curious about this population, they will really begin to reveal some things to you that you may not have considered possible before. So I'm excited for the journey of each one of you as you kind of move into that curiosity.
Thank you, Susie. And you know what? I hope that everyone listening who can really feel what truly is the loving intent of this experiment, as well as curious, will support this experiment energetically as well. Mm. If I might put that out there, that, you know, I feel that we can, as individuals and as a collected consciousness, kind of give things like this a boost, so to speak. And I would encourage people to really reflect upon and boost this with your own energy as well. And also, again, in conventional ways, as Susie said, that there are opportunities to donate and support this experiment in many ways. So thank you again, Susie. I can't thank you enough for coming back on. You have a wonderful energy. Your enthusiasm shows through your voice, just a pure loving energy in what you're doing. I mean, there's just you're so authentically enthusiastic about this, and I think we can all feel that. And so I just want to thank you for all that you're doing and for being here today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Susan. It's been a delight, just like it was last time.
Oh, well, thank you so much. You're always welcome here, and it truly is fun to talk to you, because I know that we're all curious where this is all going to go. So thank you again, and thank you to everyone listening as well. Just a show note as we go into a little bit of overtime here. And I just want to remind everyone that the next show will be Friday, October 19th at 11 a.m. Pacific, back to the regular show time. We're kind of moving the show around a lot lately, just because it seems to be called to do that, and it's working out quite well. So this show, if you want to follow when it's going to come on, I do encourage you to become a follower of the show, and then you'll receive regular email updates, and you can do that easily through the Blog Talk Radio page where you're listening right now, most likely, or if you're on the frontierbeyondfear.com website, which is also a way to listen to this show, Just click on the link to the Blog Talk Radio page and you'll be able to become a follower, and then you'll get email updates. So I also encourage people to go to that website, frontierbeyondfear.com, if you want to see upcoming guests. And as I said, on our next show, which is Friday, October 19th at 11 a.m., I'm going to be welcoming to the show for the first time Catherine Lucas, who is the author of In Case of Spiritual Emergency. And I think this is going to be a very powerful show, partly because I personally have a connection to this topic, having had a very dramatic awakening myself years ago. And what this is about is, how can you be aware of your own reactions to a dramatic spiritual awakening, as well as to those of friends and loved ones, and how can you support those people through their awakening? Because often when we awaken, some people refer it to kundalini awakening or a spiritual emergence, which is actually my preference over emergency, although it can lead to a loss of grounding if you have a higher consciousness experience. Suddenly I can't talk. I've lost my ability to talk here. But if you have an experience that goes beyond your comprehension or your level of understanding at the time, it can cause people to lose their grounding for a time. And that is what Catherine Lucas is going to talk about next week on this show, Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, and it will also be available as a podcast if you're unable to listen live. So I would welcome you back at that time. So with that said, whenever you're listening to this show, I hope you have a wonderful day, evening, whatever time of day it may be, and I hope that you experience the loving energy that this show really attempts to convey. This is a community, and we are all supporting one another with loving, energetic intent. So with that said, I will see you next time. Thank you so much for being here.